From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim McGaudette, and this is Idaho Matters. As the year winds down and we think back on 2022 and forward to the new year, what better time to sit down with the head of the Idaho Shakespeare Festival to talk about how things went this year and about what wonders they have in store for 2023. Charlie Fee is the producing artistic director of the festival, and he started off by telling our Morning Edition host, George Prentice, how this year played out for his company. Let's take a listen.
I'm going to be really honest about the challenges this year. This was the hardest year we went through in all so far of the whole pandemic. In terms of the number of actors that had COVID, the number of times we had to shut down, we had lost half the run of Ain't Misbehavin', as you may recall. By the same token, it was a summer that was so energized out at the amphitheater and felt so alive and felt really like a sense of kind of rebirth for getting together as a community and just having a good time with each other. It really did feel all summer long like a festival of joy and a festival of a community getting back together.
So 2023, let's get into it. Can I say what an unexpected surprise it is that you're going to give us another bite of Little Shop of Horrors next year?
Yeah, we haven't done that for a while. We opened this amphitheater in 1998. Starting in 1999, for the next 5 years, every single season, I brought back the most successful play from the previous year. Because of the popularity of Little Shop, I must tell you, it had at least 1,000 households in the end were on waiting lists to get tickets that never got in. And so the demand to see it was huge. It's a production we just love. And this year's production was just gorgeous. And it's a way for me to get a play on our stage as early as possible with, you know, the challenges that we're now having in terms of hiring, to be frank, right? Mm-hmm. Anybody out there who wants to build plays, right? If you're a carpenter, you're a stitcher, you know how to sew, you know how to build anything, or you just like to work with your hands, would you please give us a shout out? Send us an email.
Really?
It has become really difficult to find people who want to build things with their hands.
Well, that's interesting to know. And yeah, that is because it is a sector of the workforce that the pool is just too shallow.
Yeah. What's happening? Those of you who are interested in this subject, like you, George, there's a great article in publication called The Stage. Mm-hmm. The Stage is the premier sort of theater publication in the UK now. And there's an article this week on the existential threat to the British theater of being able to find people to work backstage and build plays. It encapsulates everything about the problem. And we've been having this problem in the States for quite a while. What's happening is this: who goes to school to learn how to build anymore? And who's going to send their children off to 4 years of a very expensive college experience and say, hey, great that you want to be in the theater department, and great that what you really want to be is a carpenter in the theater. You know, that's just over, right? And people don't work with their hands. So we're losing skill sets, and the cost of labor has skyrocketed, right, at the same time, which is fine. I mean, the how to sew, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. It's just getting harder and harder. And know how to pick up a hammer and build, a project. Or for us, even more importantly, are willing to learn how to weld, right? Welding is massively important to our work. So there's my pitch for people who are looking for fun jobs working with a theater company building things.
Well, here's something else to look forward to, and that is As You Like It, which you will direct. Certainly a favorite, but is this something you've been planning for a while?
I've been planning it because I so wanted to give Jody Dominic the opportunity to play Rosalind.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, Jody's done so many fabulous performances with us. And Rosalind is the Hamlet, I guess, in some ways, of the women in Shakespeare. It's just one of the great roles of all time, any gender. But it is a beautiful, beautiful piece and a perfect piece for Jody. And so we've been planning it. I told her she was going to play Rosalind 3 years ago. And we're finally getting to it now. And I'm so pleased. I haven't directed As You Like It since Sarah played Rosalind, frankly.
Oh my goodness, Sarah Brunner.
Yeah, Sarah was Rosalind, and that was a few years ago, and a beautiful production.
And need I remind our listeners, Jody Dominic, who has thrilled us, my goodness, in Cabaret, and as the Baker's Wife, and Into the Woods, and is a, quite frankly, a superstar.
Yeah, she is. She's just a beautiful actress and an incredibly great collaborator. And I'm going into a design meeting, George, as soon as you and I sign off this meeting. I have my designers coming together, Rick Martin and Kim Sorensen, you know, who are just been with me for 30 years working together. Kim's now the one of the lead costume staff for Hamilton globally. Yeah. And Rick has become a European opera designer primarily when he's not working with us in the summer. So two friends who have just gone on to great, great careers.
How lucky we are. Sense and Sensibility. Wow. Certainly we know the novel and the film adaptation for which Emma Thompson won the Oscar for the screenplay. But talk to me about Sense and Sensibility on the stage. This is a relatively new experience.
You know, we did Pride and Prejudice a few years ago.
Right.
And when we did it, we knew that the Austen adaptations on stage were really taking off. And I thought, well, let's try one. It became the highest average of any play we'd had in the season, meaning, you know, average people per night. And just out of nowhere, it was a smash hit. And we knew right then, well, we need to continue to look at the Austen works being adapted for the stage. The adaptation for Sense and Sensibility is done by a woman whose name is Kate Hamill. Kate is a friend of many people in the company. She's an actress who then began, very entrepreneurial, began as an actress to look at adaptations as a way of creating work for herself and had massive success with the Jane Austen novels, Sense and Sensibility being one of her first, if not her first adaptation. She's gone on to many of them. But she does very radical things with the plays. They're really fun. But eight actors, four men, four women, will do the entire novel.
Of wow. So, I was thinking of a company of 30. Wow.
Yeah, you can imagine, right? So Sarah Brunner and Jacqueline Miller. Jacqueline directed 39 Steps last year and is a choreographer as well. The two of them are going to co-direct Sense and Sensibility because it's a wildly physical production. You know, you've got eight actors and they're playing every scene and they're constantly changing character in front of you, changing costumes offstage sometimes on stage. It's really fun and super faithful telling of the Jane Austen novel. So I think people will love it. And given, you know, our audience knows our quick change styles, right, from both 39 Steps and, you know, the Tuna plays and, of course, Complete Works that we've done, I think, 100 times now. I think that they're going to love this Jane Austen.
We have just a few minutes left. I've got three things, three boxes we need to check.
Yeah.
I have to ask about Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, which was a smash on Broadway.
Absolutely. Dave Malloy, who's the composer and lyricist, Dave is from Cleveland, Ohio. Grew up in Lakewood, which is the right next to us and where most of my staff in our Great Lakes Theater live. Dave's a brilliant composer. It's a pop opera, right? It's sung through. It's beautiful music. And it became an absolute smash hit.
Yeah.
Moving from, you know, a tent finally indoors to an off-Broadway house, and then on to a Broadway season. And it had a very beautiful run, won a bunch of awards, and then all kinds of things went crazy in New York, and the production shut down. So what happened was very few people outside of that initial Broadway run and the Tony Awards ever heard of it again. And so we're doing one of the first productions of Natasha and Pierre since that Broadway run, which was years ago now. It's a fabulous production and a wild piece of literature. It's a section of Tolstoy's War and Peace, right?
Yeah.
You can't tell all of War and Peace because we would be there for a month. But as a musical, he's taken Natasha and Pierre, their story, you know, in 1812, right? The War of 1812 and all of that is going on. And there's that comet. So it's a wild love story.
I was privileged to have seen the production in New York with Josh Groban. It was an immersive experience. But what blew me away was this electropop, which I was not expecting. And yet I couldn't shake it out of my head. I told anyone who would listen about the show. And then, as you said, the world turned inside out. Real quick, I want to mention that the September production will be Dracula, The Bloody Truth, fast-paced, a bit campy, we're promised. I'm guessing you'll have fun with that. You're going to return to direct that, yes?
Yes, I am. And I'm going to probably have my team of people that I like to work with on these crazy things. Mm-hmm. It is, though, it's campy, it's wild, it's fun. But let's be honest, George, it actually tells the true story of Dracula. So if you've been wondering what the actual truth is, then you're going to learn it in this piece.
Wonderfully scary. Okay, let's talk about the audience experience. It's my understanding, rumor is that you've got something cooking that will be new for us as audiences for the next season.
Well, we've got several things coming up that are new. I want to touch on a couple of them quickly. One is we're adding more family nights. Our family nights are a night that you can bring children under the age of 6, I think it is, and bring them in. They can be laptop kids, you know, if you want them to just sit on your lap. You don't have to buy them a ticket, or you can buy them their own tickets at their own prices. And they're so popular in our audience that we're increasing the number of them. And you'll watch for them because we're not going to do it for every single show this season. I think we've picked 3 of the 5 to do an additional family night. So look at those on our website. Of course, we have gift certificates on sale now, and they're hugely popular for Christmas gifts. Mm-hmm. And lastly, in terms of ticketing, we started a program last year called the Child Add-on Seat. And again, this is because we have so many families that want to bring their children to the festival, which is a really gratifying and fantastic thing for our company. So if you are a season ticket holder at any level, 3-show, 4-show, 5-show, you can add a child to any performance you want to come to at the child price, which gives you, they sit wherever you're sitting in the theater, you'll get the reduced child price, and you can buy 1 ticket, 2, 3, 4, however many you want. So it's a way for families to be able to add to their season ticket without necessarily having to buy a full student season ticket, which you can also buy, and it's the best price ticket in the theater.
You know, what's wonderful about that is the wonder of a boy or a girl seeing their first production.
There's something about the theater, you know, it's a communal storytelling idea, right? And to have every generation sitting in a theater together, from children through grandparents and sometimes great-grandparents, that's what makes theater so special. Everybody's taking something different from the experience, right? All of those experiences are valid. Some members of the generational tree may find themselves saying, why am I sitting here watching Hamlet? I'm only 5. but they remember it, that's for sure. So we're really proud, but also just so pleased with, you know, our community here being so inclusive and accessible at our theater.
Charlie, before we go, I have to share a story with you. I told no one outside of the Shakespeare Festival that I had been asked to participate in a very unique way for Little Shop. And I didn't tell anyone, didn't tell my colleagues at work. I was there with a couple members of my family, didn't say a word. Overture starts. Then, you know, the voice comes out, and I looked at their eyes, squinted just a bit, and they cocked their head to the right, and they looked over, like very slowly turned to me, and I just gave them a very slow nod. It was the highlight of my year by far, probably of the last several years.
Oh, that's so sweet. Listen, George, that happened to me night after night, that people would turn to me and say, who is that? That's George Prentice. And I'd say, exactly.
Oh, my
this
goodness.
Actually happened, people.
Charlie, I love it. To your families, to your family of players, to your own family, we wish you health and happiness. Have a wonderful and happy new year.
Thank you so much, George. My best wishes to you, your family, all of your listeners, and the great, great Boise State Public Radio team. It's an incredible, incredible gift to our communities, to our whole state, that we have you and this station.
That was Charlie Fee, the head of the Idaho Shakespeare Festival, chatting with our own Morning Edition host, George Prentice. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. You're listening to Idaho Matters.
Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.